Market insight and analysis. You're listening to the opening bell of CNBC's Squawk on the Street.
Good Wednesday morning. Welcome to Squawk on the Street. I'm Carl Quintanilla here with Jim Cramer and David Faber. Futures are a little soft here after a solid start to December, coming off S&P NASDAQ record highs. Pfizer gets the first vaccine approval in the UK for emergency use, but investors stateside looking for a clearer path on stimulus. Our star roadmap begins with that vaccine optimism. The UK approves, with the rollout expected to begin next week.
Plus, Silicon Valley's newest and biggest top deal maker, his name is Mark Benioff. The Dow component, Salesforce acquiring Slack, the price in excess of $27 billion, the largest deal that company's ever done. And the China strategy status quo, President-elect Biden saying he won't immediately lift China tariffs. Carl.
All right, guys, a lot to get to today. We'll talk some Salesforce Slack with Jim in a minute. But, Jim, this UK approval and the hopes that the FDA is just about a week behind.
Look, we have to think about the number, the amount of vaccines out there. We're talking about 40 million. I mean, people are worried about 40 million in the United States. Of course, this is only 20 million people, but only 20 million people would take care of all the first responders and would take care of the people in long-term care in our country. I don't think they're taking our vaccines. We're going to have enough, but this is monumental, and it's going to put incredible pressure on our own regulators to get this so we'll have this within the next 10 days. And David knows that I am bullish on this. I was not even as bullish. No, I was not bullish enough, David, because the UK, which has a very serious group of medical people, is saying, let's get it done. I mean, the UK is not some third world country.
No.
I mean, I'm not lesser developed, sorry.
No, it's not. And we're waiting, and we're obviously focused on this and the distribution. We heard from the CDC yesterday, as expected, of course, as you would hope, healthcare workers will be the first to get vaccinated. And they certainly need to be, given everything they've gone through. And by the way, they are overtaxed right now to the point that they haven't been throughout the pandemic in many, many parts of the country, Jim. I know it's something we don't talk perhaps enough about, the sacrifices that they have made. But they will be first, then people in nursing homes, and then on from there. And you heard Dr. Fauci yesterday, or we had sound from him yesterday, saying perhaps April and May, healthy body 20 and 30-year-olds will be able to get the vaccine.
I think that he's, look, Dr. Fauci, to disagree with him at this point seems a little, it's a puerile. I will say this, though. I do think that there's, we haven't heard from J&J. They've been mum. I do know that Emergent Bio is talking about maybe more than a billion vials. So I don't think the issue is going to be the quantity. There was a government servant on Brian Sullivan's this morning, who's talking about all the state bottlenecks. There's not going to be a bottleneck unless there's no CVS, no Walgreens, no supermarket, no Walmart, because those are the ones that are ready. Remember, it's Operation Warp Speed, which Pfizer's not a part of, but the other guys are a part of, which then goes to McKesson, which is very good, knows how to handle wholesale. And then right to CVS, right to Walgreens. You'll go to the CVS website, you'll get an appointment, and you'll get this. And I don't understand why people think this is going to be so hard. Yes, there are states that are worried about people not being able to get it, but the long-term care, I mean, you talk to someone like Deborah Cafaro, who runs Ventas, which is the biggest long-term care, they'll have it by Christmas. I think this is amazing. Carl, I think that no one was expecting this to be this good.
Yeah, I mean, you're not suggesting that supply is not going to be an issue.
Not an issue.
Scott Gottlieb talking with Andrew earlier this morning about whether airlines, for example, should start demanding that you show proof of vaccination. And Gottlieb's point is we're not going to have enough to make it a requirement to engage in commercial activity in this country.
No, I mean, look, I think that I'm saying we're enough for the people who are at risk. The people who aren't at risk, I think that that could be. A lot of those people, by the way, are asymptomatic, for heaven's sake. I mean, it seems like the NFL is largely asymptomatic, except for the Baltimore Ravens. I do think that we're the healthiest people will be able to wait. I think that otherwise, you're talking about 30%. We went over this yesterday, possible 30%. These are Dr. Gottlieb's numbers for some states. Some states are so out of control that I don't think we have any idea, David, what it really must be like to live in the Dakotas.
Yeah, no, I think there are, you know, we bring on the hospital administrators, sometimes they're doctors, sometimes not, who run these hospital systems in various states. And I can't say that any of them have had anything to say other than it's a bad situation or a dire situation.
Right.
And that they are not expecting these weeks ahead. And we've said it so many times. We can certainly now see on the other side of this, you're pointing out, I mean, it could be as soon as Christmas that people in nursing
yes.
homes and those kinds of facilities can have the vaccine available. But it is going to be a rough, rough few weeks, if not potentially months ahead, in terms of new cases, in terms of hospitalizations. And unfortunately, even with the death rate being a lot less than it was in the spring, in terms of deaths, Jim. And then that gets you back to the broader conversation about the economy as well, moving from that, you know, pivoting from the devastation to lives to the devastation to the, in certain parts of the economy. You've talked about it so much, Jim.
Oh, yeah.
And yesterday you were promising me that you were going to get the Treasury Secretary to get moving. It does appear that he did get moving a little bit. So well done there. But
thank
it's not
you,
clear that there's going to be an outcome here in terms of any new
did
bill
I say
coming
that
out.
That, did I give you that I failed like that? No. David, I need 36 hours.
No, I didn't say you failed.
I'm going to get this done.
I didn't say you failed. You were embracing the challenge.
I said that I predicted there would be a phone call between
you were trying to inspire the Treasury
Speaker.
Secretary.
We're not done.
Through historical figures who've held that office previously.
Gallatin, Morgenthau.
Right. And we did get, listen, I don't know where, you know, we'll see. We'll see if we get something and what the number is. Now, we got the $908 billion
right.
offer from sort of that bipartisan coalition.
Right.
Mitt Romney signing on there, importantly, saying, hey, he's a deficit hawk, but this is more important than that right now.
We've got to get to April, May, or else we have to start a whole new group of companies. And it takes a huge amount of capital. Carl, I mean, look, a business when it's stopped and wiped out is not a business that just flicks on a switch when the vaccine comes. You've got to keep these companies alive. They were able to do it, but I think more people felt that the pandemic was going to end sooner. Now we're at the situation where there's 40% of the non-Walmarts of the world that are going to go under. And that is not a great idea. So I think that Secretary Mnuchin wants to be very much on the right side of history, not playing politics, wants to get this done. Even the Senate sounds like they want to get this done. So the idea is that the small and medium-sized business must not lose the foot race to the virus. And I think that that's one of the things that I'm working on today. David?
Good to hear.
Well, that's going to be important, Jim, because the Senate bill that McConnell is teeing up for a floor vote has no state and local, no stimulus checks, obviously, no money for transit agencies. And as Janet Yellen said yesterday, the new administration, at least, believes they've got to work fast because you can't let the effects of long-term unemployment fester without seeing long-term social negative externalities. Take a listen to what she said.
The pandemic and economic fallout that together have caused so much damage for so many and have had a disproportionate impact on the most vulnerable among us. Lost lives, lost jobs, small businesses struggling to stay alive or closed for good. So many people struggling to put food on the table and pay bills and rent. It's an American tragedy. And it's essential that we move with urgency.
Jim, we're getting some data this morning on business closures in November. It's not good.
No.
ADP was amiss. Credit card volumes from Visa and JP Morgan. Softer now,
yes.
ISM unemployment index back in contraction. You know what we're talking about.
Yeah, well, Senator McConnell and the group of Republican people who have been against this were thinking about a V economy. A V could be off the table very, very quickly. I don't know. I mean, does Senator McConnell want to be on the wrong side of history? I mean, periodically you read about people in history books. And they were regarded as being bad guys. I'm not saying he's going to be Senator McCarthy. Roy Cohn trying to create a situation where we found out about the 57 communists in the State Department. It's not going that far. But, David, I think that you really have to be careful if you're on the McConnell side, because do you want to be on the side that stops small and medium-sized business, the backbone of the country? That's not where you want to be. And you don't want McConnell does not want to be a disgrace. He doesn't want to be someone who's against small, medium-sized business, the Republican part of the country. I think he's going to have a change of heart.
Wow. I find that hard to imagine.
Well, I think he's going to find himself on the wrong side of history, because there's going to be people right now who are trying to figure out what the history books are going to say, and they're not going to be kind to those who wiped out small and medium-sized business in favor of Walmart, in favor of Costco, in favor of Target, in favor of Walgreens, in favor of CVS. Is that what he wants? Because I'll tell you, man, he is going to move the stock market higher. Maybe that's the goal, to get Walmart to $200.
Yeah.
Well, there's something worth betting on.
Jim, I could not imagine trying to understand, let alone explain, the thinking of Mitch McConnell or what's going on inside his brain.
Maybe he likes Amazon.
I will come to you, though, on the workings of another man's brain, and his name is Mark Benioff. And you know him very well. And guys, before we wrap up our first block of programming here, let's get to this deal that was announced, of course, after the close yesterday, just like we told you it would be. Salesforce announcing the acquisition of Slack. It is a big deal for them. We can, of course, see that Salesforce's stock, now the reported earnings as well, Jim, I'll let you weigh in terms of that and how the quarter looked. But you can see the stock is down, and that is going to have an impact on Slack. It's, as we said on Monday, it is a little bit more cash than stock. It's $26.79 in cash, and that's 0.0776 of a Salesforce share. So you can figure out what that is worth at all this point. But Jim, a couple of things, you know, there are those who are wondering, well, does it really take Salesforce into an area that they're not as familiar with? Does it mean that he is going to start making acquisitions outside their core competency or not? And then there have been a few people concerned with the CFO's departure and the replacement of a long tenured person at the company. But Amy Weaver, the new CFO, was a general counsel. Kind of seems sometimes can be an odd move to have made. And I've heard a couple of shareholders this morning a bit concerned about that.
Well, Hawkins is just a love figure.
I'm sorry, what?
The CFO is a love figure.
Yes, and very, very close to the investment community.
Yes.
And relied on for many years by the investment community. And so that also
plays. David, before you jump to conclusions, seven firms today wrote about it.
Yep.
Seven firms hated it.
So there's unanimity.
Yeah, I mean, let's not forget that when people get together, all right, what do they have to say about it? It's too expensive. Mark doesn't know what he's doing. He hasn't done. He said no deals in the next 3 months, and here's a deal. Slack was doing very poorly. You can't take on Microsoft Teams. You cannot believe how much they paid. It was not an elite company that they bought. So, David, I think, you know, it's mixed.
It's mixed. Well, let's hear from Mr. Benioff himself, who joined you last night, and see what he had to say.
Slack changes everything and makes Salesforce a whole new type of company, a company that is truly architected to work from anywhere. Now, we have already introduced Salesforce Work From Anywhere a couple months ago, you know that. But now with Slack, it really supercharges our approach and lets all of our customers re-architect their workforce to be truly from anywhere.
David, he is just saying, Microsoft, here we come.
Right.
We're going to be a $500 billion enterprise when we're done. We're going to take sales of Slack up 3 times, and we're putting together a coalition. And, David, that coalition will include Zoom, okay, which is on the right side of Mark.
Yep.
It could include Snowflake, which reports this week. Tableau, a deal that's been viewed as very successful. This is a soup-to-nuts attempt to say, Satya Nadella, it's war.
Wow. Well, that sounds like the kind of story that we're going to be following for potentially years to come.
I predict that these seven firms, they will eat crow. I'll give them Gouldens or Greg Poupon. They can have the choice.
You've been a supporter of this company.
Well, I like the Tableau deal. I like the MuleSoft deal. I like the ExecTarget deal. I've been right.
You've been right. And it's hard to bet against Benioff. That's for sure.
Don't bet against Benioff.
You lose. All right. Coming up later in our program, we're going to have an exclusive interview with Intel CEO Bob Swan. They did have a win yesterday of a customer contract, but we're going to talk a lot about their plan in terms of manufacturing. Much more Squawk in the Street straight ahead. Well, later today, we will get the latest, if not one of the last, entries into the direct-to-consumer wars. Discovery has a 12 o'clock event scheduled in which it will unveil its Discovery Plus streaming service that will include, of course, so much of the programming on many of their key networks at Discovery, whether it's Home, whether it's Food, whether it's TLC, and on from there. In fact, I think, 25% of all women are viewers of the Discovery networks. But some things we don't know that we want to tell you about right now, according to people who are familiar with the situation, is that the launch is going to be accompanied by a deal similar to what we saw Disney do with, yes, Verizon. Verizon, I've learned, is signed on as a so-called partner for Discovery. It's very important here when you're launching one of these new direct-to-consumer platforms, particularly this late in the game, that you have some sort of partnership that will give you potentially the scale to reach as many people as possible. And in this case, it is going to be Verizon. My understanding is that Discovery's partnership with Verizon will be quite similar to what we saw with Disney, in that Verizon will give customers up to 12 months of the Discovery Plus service for free. Now, there are different points. Some will only get 6 months based on their service level. Some will get a full year. But you get the picture. About 55 million or so Verizon customers will be able to take advantage of, I'm told, by people familiar with the situation, this offer to receive Discovery Plus for its first year at least for free. What's that going to save you? Well, it's going to be priced at $6.99 if you don't want any ads. And that is the service that Verizon will be partnered on. So it's the $6.99 ad-free product. There is a ad-supported product as well. There it is at $4.99. So that gives you some sense as to the pricing. Remember when Disney Plus came, $6.99? I was in the room. I remember people going, whoa, at that time. Now it's become sort of that key price point in some ways. Of course, you got HBO Max far above that. You got Netflix far above that now at this point. But this is very important for their launch because they believe to actually effectively get out of the box and get anywhere near the numbers as you look at some of the price comparisons there. So many pluses these days, by the way. Disney Plus, Apple TV Plus. There's going to be Paramount Plus. There's Hulu Plus. It's a lot of pluses. But you want to have as many people as possible when you get out of the box to give yourself, Jim, the opportunity to reach that 30, 40, 50, 60 million sub worldwide. And by the way, they've already had a soft launch as well in Europe using with Sky, I believe, as well, quietly there. And they'll be launching in Italy. It will be available, as you might imagine. I think they're signing up the likes of Roku and Amazon. That is the platforms, Roku, the Fire Stick, to be able to have people get it as quickly as they can on their various platforms that they would access these streaming services. So there you can see it. But it's an important moment for Discovery, Jim. No doubt about it.
That's very impressive. I mean, so they've learned that you need to be ubiquitous to get Sky, to get Roku. This morning, there was an excellent piece by Craig Moffett talking about why Verizon, it's time to buy.
Yeah, they upgraded Verizon.
He didn't have your scoop.
No.
I think he would have been even more emphatic.
What's interesting is, from Verizon's perspective, remember, the Disney offer, a lot of people are coming off of that. And a key question is going to be, what's the churn going to look like at Disney Plus?
Right.
Because so many people had been getting it, or at least tens of millions, we think, for free for at least a year as a result of being Verizon Wireless customers. But from Verizon's perspective, they've got Disney on one side and Discovery, a very different kind of programming, on the other side. And my understanding is they're actually going to promote both. And they're going to be a partner here in terms of advertising, you know, in the Verizon store. So Discovery Plus is going to get a decent amount of attention that way. Listen, it's what you want. It's so important to the future of the company. Although, by the way, let's not forget the big trade-offs here. You make so much more in the cable ecosystem still.
Right.
Your margins are so much better, but you have to have a direct-to-consumer strategy. It's the way you get a multiple in this market. We see it with Disney as well, which got some positive comments, I think, if not an upgrade from somebody today based on expectations for direct-to-consumer there.
That's a big scoop, David, because it shows you you've got to play ball. By the way, I think that Verizon's been very aggressive. Sensing that, I think AT&T's a bit in a bit of a jam.
Well, AT&T has their service. They own it.
Yeah.
It's called HBO Max. And obviously, there is that same kind of deal for AT&T wireless customers. Carl, we'll be following this closely, what it means for Discovery as well. Noon is when they're going to be introducing a lot more about the service.
Yeah, and we'll get to that Moffitt upgrade, which you talked about on Verizon. City did go to 175 on Disney today. It's a street high. Talk about why when Squawk on the Street continues. Jim mentioned it earlier, the street not that hot on the Salesforce Slack deal. Piper and Baird cut Slack to neutral. Citi cuts CRM to neutral, saying the acquisition stretches our conviction. Price target 250. It's leading the laggards this morning on the S&P. Squawk on the Street's back in a minute.
All right, let's get to a mad dash as we also, we got only 2 minutes before we get to an opening bell, Jim. It's hump day, by the way. McDonald's on the menu for you.
Well, Piper lowered comps today. And remember, it's because they spoke with management. The decreased consumer mobility, lower price targets at 2 and 9. I have to tell you what's amazing here. Talk about sales disruptions. To me, McDonald's is one of the companies that has done quite well in the pandemic. Now we're really starting to narrow it down to Chipotle. I think Chipotle is really the only company that's managed to be able to do digital and make it so that they can make as much money from one of their stores in a pandemic as they can otherwise. I mean, Yum's trying to come back. But David, McDonald's, I mean, you're talking about a company that's been able to survive and do anything it can. And this is the beginning of what I think may be that even we can't handle it as this thing goes on and on. But, hello?
Really?
Well, they cut numbers. I mean,
yeah.
Consumer, there's, well, I mean, Chipotle does really well.
I know it does.
Why? Well, I mean, look, I'm reporting a lowered comp from Piper. I thought McDonald's was a breakout stock here.
Right.
I've been watching it go down for the last few days, and I have not been able to figure out the trajectory, given the fact that they're one of the companies that has been so helpful in wiping out the diners.
Right.
Which I think Senator McConnell, remember, Mr. Think Big. Shop big.
Yeah.
I thought that that was something that he might like. But McDonald's turns out to be maybe not as big a winner.
As we see, the stock has moved down, as you say. Just
look at that. It's not been a great stock to own versus Chipotle,
In the last week or two. Right. But over.
But Chipotle, if we put that chart up, I think we'll see that is the burrito bowl without, you know, remember, you can just have it with the meat or chicken.
Got it. I'll keep that in mind.
Carl?
Yeah, guys. Chipotle testing smoked brisket in Cincinnati and Sacramento.
Really?
We found out last week. So, yeah, the Giants are definitely duking it out, Jim. There's the opening bell. A little bit of a give back here as we see the S&P turn a little bit red. Although we keep thinking about some of these metrics that roll in from November, Jim. The number of S&P 500 names that were green in November, 464, which is almost as much as the April record of 478. So you had to work hard to get a red stock in the month of November.
Yeah, I mean, look, this is an incredible moment. There was a rolling bull market week by week where you had FANG, then you had the oils, then you had the industrials, then you had retail, and then you started all over again. Throughout this, we even got banks doing well because people keep talking about inflection in the yield curve. I don't see that happening yet. But it's true. I mean, cash was terrible. And you had to work hard. You can't, David, it is so difficult to find a company that screwed up, that really didn't do a good job. Particularly because, remember, a lot of the S&P, they did pretty well overseas. And the overseas has been very more. Japan's been very good. We never talk about Japan.
No, we don't.
In 1988, we used to start all sentences with Japan.
We did. During their period of great ascendance, when we were worried they were taking everything over. Remember when they owned Rockefeller Center for a brief period?
Yeah, how'd that do?
I remember when I started as a banking reporter in 1987, all the big Japanese banks were playing big time in the U.S. market. Sumitomo and Mitsui and Mitsubishi and long-term credit, and I can go on. They all left.
You have Bob Swan, right?
I do.
Intel was not even in the top 10 semiconductors then. They were all Japanese.
Right. But they have, to your point, there's been a nice rebound there.
Yes.
When you hear it, their technology companies trade at far lesser multiples than do ours, by the way.
And look, the gaming companies, they dominate gaming. We know from Lisa Su that gaming is the hottest area.
Are you taking a look at shares of Sony, for example,
it's incredible.
To your point? What a year Sony's had. I mean, it's not a name we talk about that often.
We should.
But I know. Put up S&E. I mean, it's been a great performer this year, has Sony. Of course, PlayStation, to your point, has been a key part of that, although they benefited a number of different areas. But PlayStation's been very important.
Do you remember, David, that when you would get the call at around 9 o'clock at night, we're taking up Tokyo Electron, you probably want to get involved. I mean, Japan, Carl, when Japan was at, I don't know, when their Nikkei was at 38,000, we were, I don't know, substantially below it. And they, there's the dollar amount of square footage in Tokyo, Dave, remember it was like, it was equal to like an acre in the United States.
Yeah. It was quite something.
And that's when The Enigma of Japanese Power was a bestseller.
Right. We were I know. Well, that's and where now, we're focused on them in terms of trade, Carl, as well. Yeah.
Is it interesting? 1987?
And now we're talking about China.
Yep.
Oh, yeah. China's doing well.
And as relative to China now, Jim, Biden talks to Tom Friedman in the Times this morning, says that he will leave the China tariffs in place while he does a full China review with allies. But it does not look like that is going to get rolled back anytime soon after the January 20.
No, I mean, that gives Peter Navarro one more chance to raise him even more. Navarro, how's he working this his Chinese back? Carl, I have to tell you that if he gave up those tariffs without getting anything in return, I don't know. The headlines would be horrendous. But he is working with the coalition of the willing, as Larry Kudlow used to talk about, all the European companies. Now, I think one of the things that people don't recognize, if you go to Milan, what are all the posters? What are all the billboards? It's about the Belt and Road Initiative. I mean, the Chinese have made inroads in Europe to the point where I don't think that President-elect Biden understands you're not going to find a lot of countries in Europe that are willing to stand with him against China. So what will happen is that I predict that we'll get rid of the tariffs and there'll be a big agricultural buy. And that's one of the reasons why the stock of deer has been very strong. But that's about it. I think that President Biden, like many presidents previous to President Trump, wants to work with the elites in getting things so that the deals are good. You know, more diapers, David.
More diapers?
Well, we got to sell more diapers into China.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Coca-Cola.
Coca-Cola.
Right?
Coca-Cola Company of America. Yeah, absolutely.
Procter.
Yeah.
Procter. How about the semiconductor companies?
Well, we don't have a lot of that anymore. Intel's the one.
Right.
Well, really. In terms of manufacturing, at least.
Yeah. Bob's he's a financial guy.
Yeah, we're nowhere near where we once were in terms of that, obviously.
No, but I just don't think you can just go to the Chinese and say, hey, you know what, guys? Without getting anything in return, we're stripping everything that Trump did. I want to hear from Peter Navarro. I wonder how he feels about that.
Do we really have to hear from him? Do we? Please. Carl, the dollar also plays into this. Not something we talk about that often. Certainly, maybe if Sarah joins us in the tent, she'll want to talk about it. It's been weak lately, as you know, even with yesterday, that move in the bond market. It'll be interesting to see how that figures into any of these talks. And then, of course, we got Bitcoin skyrocketing. Maybe that's also the dollar's up a little bit there. But you can see what it's been doing lately.
Carl, people are not talking enough about what will happen with the earnings with the weaker dollar. When you're on an Apple call or Procter & Gamble call, it's all this constant currency. Can you imagine what it's going to be like when you're on a J&J call and the dollar is going to be positive? Do you know how the upward revisions we're going to get?
Talk about Coke. You just mentioned McDonald's, Walmart. Yeah, I mean, that's going to be a huge effort by Janet Yellen as Treasury Secretary, if she's confirmed, to make sure that there is a global agreement on where the dollar should stand, but the potential upside for currency effects on the S&P, Jim, is powerful. I did want to get you on some of the names, travel-related, that obviously had a great run in November. Norwegian did suspend all voyages through the end of February now. And, of course, JetBlue, pricing almost 37 million shares, even as this compromise proposal on the Hill, Jim, would give $17 billion to airlines.
Yeah, look, I think that remember what we said yesterday when these deals are announced, the some of the younger investors thrive on them. Norwegian, by the way, is going to be the one where I predict that you will have to take a PCR test before you get on. All of the people who work on the boats will have PCR tests, and you're going to have a COVID-free environment on the Norwegian cruise. This is what Frank Del Rio is going to be promising. Maybe I'm front-running what he wants to do a little bit. But that's one of the reasons why the Robinhood people will not stop. They're not going to stop. Robinhood is a broader rubric for younger investors who think bigger than older investors who are only worried about the quarter. David, I speak to a number of younger investors because they think I'm making fun of them, which I'm not. And they look at Norwegian and they say, do you really think that no one's going to cruise next year at this time? I want to buy Norwegian. What does Wall Street want to do? They want to look at some number, a room rate number. The younger people don't think like that. They think Norwegian is going to be back, and let's buy some.
How do the younger people feel about Salesforce? By the way, a company that hits every box when it comes to sustainability, social awareness. I mean, its ESG scores have to be extremely high, given Mr. Benioff. I mentioned Salesforce because the stock's getting crushed.
I think the
down 10%, not just off the quarter, but off people, you know, questioning, as you pointed out earlier, just how much they're paying, even though we told you it was going to be a big number for Slack. And then this larger idea, Jim, that this is a company that is made up largely of a lot of different acquisitions.
Well,
what is
but they've
some $50 billion over the last 3 years. So that's a big number.
Tableau's been great. Exact Target's been great. MuleSoft's been great. He knows how to integrate. When you speak with Mark, he always says, listen, what are you going to do? A lot of the great companies are public already, and you have to pay up to get them. Now, I think, remember, he's going to be in alliance with Zoom. I think it'll be an alliance with
Snowflake.
What does
Snowflake. That mean? What do you, when you say that alliance, what are you talking about?
Well, I mean, you know,
exactly?
If you're with Microsoft, yep. You want Teams and you want their video.
Right.
You can't not have a video option if you're Mark.
So Zoom would come. It would be an informal alliance, or they would put a product together in some way go into market with together.
Yes. Or? Remember, the one thing that Zoom's been all alone the whole time, mm-hmm. and they haven't had partnerships. They haven't bought anybody. I just think that it'd be very easy for Eric Yuan, who's really good friends, the CEO, really good friends with Mark.
Right.
They offer a soup to nuts. You need video now. That's how deals will be done, and you'll do it on Slack. That's Mark's 360 approach will be Slack. They're waving to each other. There was like the Slack CEO was with Stuart Butterfield, different building, is waving to Mark in the call. The younger people will come in soon, David.
The younger people will come in soon to buy
Jim,
the stock.
Yes.
Sorry, Carl. Go ahead.
No, I was going to say, I mean, to the degree that we're talking about concerns around the deal, it seems to pivot around what it says about organic growth, right, Jim? The degree to which they're still digesting things like Tableau.
Right.
And then the idea that Benioff said just a few weeks ago that he didn't like the setup in M&A in general.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I think that this one came up and you had to be there. This is a property that could have been going to go to other companies. I just think that people have to recognize, as I asked Mark first thing, isn't this just a war with Microsoft? And I have to tell you, I think it is. And this is important. This is if he's going to have he wants to pry people away from a Microsoft product. He does think that Slack's a superior product. I think a lot of people like Slack very much. And Mark wants to be a $500 billion enterprise company. He wants to take on Microsoft everywhere. Microsoft, there's been no love lost between these two companies since, David, do you remember the LinkedIn deal that Salesforce had? And Satya Nadella came in and broke it up.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. Do you think that makes for friendship?
I may not, but that's the way things go. I mean, you know.
What do you mean that's the way things go?
You're willing to pay more for a company, you get to own that company.
But if you're friends, usually. You don't betray friends. You don't just do that.
Oh, really? I'm not going to do something that I think is in the best interest of my strategic vision for my company because I'm your friend?
Well, David, some things are...
You can stay friends. Sorry, I need this more than you think you need it. If you think you need it so much, you can pay more for it. If you can't, then sorry.
You really think that's the way it should work?
I think it is the way it worked.
I'm reminded of an old saying, some people want to make friends, we just want to make money. I don't know where I heard that.
Yeah, I said that to Mark when I heard that you lost LinkedIn.
Yeah, but listen, he's won plenty of these things, and he does pay a good number. Unclear to me whether there really was anybody else in terms of Slack. I had heard that there was a negotiation
else.
Between these two companies. But
you mentioned ESG.
Yeah.
And that it's good.
Yeah.
Younger people will come in soon.
Yeah.
They've just been waiting
and
for that.
And they're not going to be worried about the new CFO as the general counsel.
Mark Hawkins, great guy. Went to a Warriors game with him.
Amy Weaver. But they did say, I'm told she's a trusted advisor to Mark and a leader who has Mark's trust. That is
versus Amy CFO. Hood. Versus Amy Hood. CFO
of Microsoft. Yeah.
Carl? Yeah. Guys, there's a little mix today. The banks and energy as a sector are just a little bit green. AMD record high today. Let's get to Bob Pisani. Hey, Bob.
Yeah, we're almost flattish. In fact, we had a weak open, 3-1 declining to advancing stocks. Carl, thanks very much here. Just take a look at the sectors here. Slightly more defensive tilt than yesterday, obviously. So healthcare a little bit better. I take a look at some of the others. Consumer staples holding up all right. Banks are positive, as Carl mentioned. Industrials just turned positive. They were negative at the open. Tech's been weak, but remember, you've got Salesforce weighing on the tech group overall here. Days like this, when you're not certain about the direction, you tend to have these thematic ETF players kind of sell off very easy. What's thematic? Well, it's mostly thematic tech, things like solar stocks, things like cloud computing, lithium battery ETFs, online retail. That's the way investors play these things these days. They use these thematic ETFs to go in and out of the market tactically. And you could see that today, a little weakness in those thematic groups. The big debate in the active management community is what happens in December with value versus growth, and how do you close out the year? So remember, generally active managers underperform their benchmarks, but they did it again in November. They underperformed their benchmarks, but active funds have a bias towards growth. Well, that's a problem because the market leadership has tilted towards value now. Is that a permanent trend? You don't know, but the active management community is really worried about this. Do they need to sort of change what they have been doing? Remember, a lot of that value story really depends on the vaccine rollout. So this is a real dilemma for the active management community and what to do right now. In terms of what's moving the market, well, you know, it's really the rollout of the vaccine that's dictating virtually everything. The sentiment right now on the market overall, very extreme bullishness. Numbers off the charts there in terms of sentiment. Valuation, I'll call it elevated. I think it's a little more than that. I'm being diplomatic about it. Stimulus is very uncertain. McConnell seems to have rejected the latest overtures here. So really the news is all around the vaccine and the rollout proceeding around that. About the valuations, what I'm talking about here is 2020 here, $138, 2021, $169 for the S&P 500. If you put that up, that would be almost 22 times forward numbers for the S&P. That's very, very expensive numbers. And they're already rolling out 22 and we're at 19 times 2022 numbers. That's elevated earnings estimates here. Everybody says the economy's expanding in 2021, maybe, but there's no bargains out there, folks. That's my point. Hey, speaking of not a lot of bargains, you see Morgan Stanley, they finally said something about Palantir. It's one of the first companies to come out. They downgraded Palantir to equal weight, to underweight, excuse me, from equal weight, $17 price target. This company started at 10, went to 31. And we're talking about earning 12 cents next year, 12 cents here, $30 company. Now it's down, but you see Morgan Stanley finally said the risk-reward paradigm shifts decidedly negative for the shares. Very little change in the fundamental story. 12 cents, do the multiple on that one. Morgan Stanley, I think, finally making a call on that particular stock. Carl, back to you.
All right, Bob. Thanks, Bob Pisani. ADP was a disappointment, which is going to make claims and the jobs number even more key. Let's get to Rick Santelli. Hey, Rick.
Good morning, Carl. And indeed, we could call 307,000 a disappointment. We're looking for a number between 400,000 and 450,000. But we're splitting hairs here. The reality is what the market thinks of the number. So let's look at an intraday of tens. And you can see right around 8:15 Eastern, well, right after that, we started seeing yields come up. So we moved lower into the number, and we came out of it virtually ignoring the number. What does it give us any information about Friday? Possibly. We all know we're going to potentially be jobs light. But isn't that sort of old news? Vaccines are going to be arriving shortly. Look at a two-day of tens. We are building on yesterday's big move, double-digit gains in long maturity yields. Right now, we're up 2 basis points in a 10-year, as you see. And if you move this all the way back to November, you can see that November 10th high, which is around a 96 basis point yield high close, is in the crosshairs right now. We're only about a basis point away or so. We start to get above that and close above that, you are definitely going to be breaching 1%, and you're going to make many traders a little more aggressive who've thought all along, well, if rates move up, the Fed will just start buying more. Well, in a vaccine world, that might not be as easy as it sounds. Let's switch gears quickly. It's all about the UK today. Vaccine approval, well, look at the pound versus dollar on a 24-hour chart. Big drop in the pound, but that isn't the story. Open the chart up to June of 2018. It fell from a level we haven't seen since June of 18 in favor of the pound. But if you look at the pound versus the euro, a completely different scenario. That's a year-to-date chart. You can see it's much weaker look than the pound versus the dollar. Remember, December 31st, the big day for the Brexit. And there's lots of questions. So you're going to start to see a lot more day-to-day volatility. Carl, Jim, David, back to you.
Okay, thank you, Rick. With the Bond Report. Well, coming up, don't miss an exclusive interview with Intel CEO Bob Swan. More Squawk on the Street, straight ahead.
Walmart is upping the ante against Amazon in the holiday shopping wars. The Dow Component says it's removing the $35 shipping minimum for online orders by subscribers of Walmart Plus. Beginning Friday, members will get free next day and two-day shipping on items like toys, appliances, and clothing. Jim, we don't know exactly how many members, but we do know Prime has 150 million. And I did notice today on Amazon, RBC reiterates and outperformed 3,800.
Yeah, look, both these companies are doing incredibly well. I think that Walmart's using its strategy of having all its stores, brick and mortar warehouses. Amazon, I mean, what can I say? The more that the pandemic rages, the more that people are just going to reach and buy things on Amazon. And I just think that, I don't know if Wall Street seems to realize it, but while this is going on, there are many people who are just scared to go out. This is not a national lockdown. It's a volunteer lockdown, David.
It is. And there are still people who probably shouldn't go out, to your point. And we've talked about it so many times in terms of the ascendance of these companies that already were ascendant, were already the giants. But over the last 9 months, and listen, I always come back to the number of employees that Amazon has added over the last 9 months is truly extraordinary. I'm not sure there's been anything quite like it in the history of American commerce.
Just the military in 1939,
well, that's not
40.
Right. That's not a business. So,
well, yeah. Yeah, good point.
Yeah. It's incredible. And continues, Carl, to this day,
yeah,
every day, hiring,
I know,
hundreds of
2,800. 2,800 a day since June, every day, almost 3,000 new employees at Amazon. It's never been done before in private enterprise anyway, as you said. We'll take a break here. HPE is the other big story of the morning as they beat and raise and move their headquarters to Texas. We'll talk about that with Antonio Neri on Squawk Alley later on today. Don't go anywhere. Let's get to Jim and stop trading.
There's an almost $200 billion company that we do not talk about enough, which is Thermo Fisher, TMO, done a series of great acquisitions. They are the PCR company. And this morning, Goldman Sachs really put the company in perspective, recommends buying it. I could not agree more. I think this and Danaher, two incredible companies. But Thermo Fisher is going to be the company that, when we look back, is going to be maybe thought to do the most in terms of making it so that we were able to test whether people had this with an incredible success rate. I mean, this is not like 80% with a PCR. If PCR says you got it, you got it. And Thermo Fisher is the PCR company that I like.
Wow. Yeah, that's an interesting call, Jim, as testing is really going to move to the forefront now that a vaccine looks like it's here. All right, how about tonight?
Okay, we have Brad Jacobs from XPO Logistics, always a deal guy, David. Maybe you want to focus over here. And then PVH, we're going to be able to talk about, we're going to talk about how's Christmas sales going to do. Nobody knows that like Manny Chirico. What a show. Gentlemen, it's a pleasure.
Always.
We'll do it again tomorrow,
Don't
Jim.
Don't forget, everybody
we'll
hates the. Everyone hates the Salesforce deal, except for me. I want that noted, David. I want it noted,
I will mark it down.
Please?
This is a pencil. Don't people like, you know?
Yeah, well, okay, except for younger people. They love it. Younger people love it because of ESG.
They love it. They don't know a thing, but they love it.
David, how dare you denigrate the seed corn of our country?
I apologize.
No problem.
Jim, we'll see you at 6. Mad Money, of course, with Jim Cramer, 6 p.m. Eastern Time.
You've been listening to the opening hour of CNBC's Squawk on the Street.